Good evening. It's 10 o'clock Sunday evening. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Mark DeGroft. For the next half hour, I will be reading the poetry of Jimmy Stewart. Yes, the actor and the general, all-around good guy. He has a book here, 30 pages of poetry that he wrote throughout his life, and we'll share that this evening. In his introduction, he writes, "I'm sure I never said to myself, 'Now, Jim, why don't you sit down and write a poem?' It's still a mystery to me, but I think it's probably something that happened by accident, like a lot of things that have happened in my life. I've always envied people who kept diaries. This is a very logical way to keep events in your life on paper instead of in your memory. And I've never been any good at keeping a diary. I was determined to keep one of my experiences in the war, but I failed completely, and when I got my footlocker back after returning from the service, I found my diary book with only two entries, my first and second days in the service." But getting back to poems, I think perhaps it was a desire on my part to write down an event that was unique and special in my life. The first time it happened, I was in South America, and I'll have to explain that. Our very dear friends, Bess and Fran Johnson, arranged a trip for my wife, Gloria, and me to go to South America. It was essentially a fishing trip. We fished for marlin off the coast of Peru, also fished the Chilean lakes for several days. This was wonderful, and we went fly fishing for German brown trout that had been there for a long time. Gloria did the best and caught an 8-pound German brown. I was very proud of her and asked if we couldn't have the fish mounted. Our guide, Gustavo Schwed, said that we could do it in Argentina, which where we were bound. So we put the fish on ice in the truck, started over the Andes to Argentina, which turned out to be quite a long trip. And during the trip, the ice around the German brown trout melted, and the fish started to get just a little high. For some reason, we started to refer to the fish as George. We finally arrived at our destination, a town called Junin de los Andes, which is a small place in western Argentina, but also it was beside a wonderful trout stream that was filled with German brown and rainbow. We checked into the hotel and were led up to the third floor with steps all the way, and I tripped on the top step and fell down. I thought I was tired from the long drive. The next day we were out in the trout stream and it was wonderful fishing, and at the end of the day we returned to the hotel in Junin and started up the steps to our rooms. And then a strange thing happened. Every one of us who reached the top step tripped and fell down. We spent one more day in Junin, and during that time I found out why we all tripped on the top step. I felt I should record this in some way so that I wouldn't forget it. As we left for our next stop in Argentina, I remember saying to Gloria out of the clear blue sky, "The top step in the hotel in Junin is mean." It sort of surprised me that what I just said rhymed, so that night at our next stop, I sat down and tried to tell the story of Junin and make it all rhyme. And here's what I came up with. The top step in the hotel in Junin is mean, like the devil is mean. And it lies at the top of the steps, so quiet, so still, so serene. But this top step has something quite special, a very ingenious device. It's half an inch higher than the other steps. A whole inch, to be more precise. And it uses this inch as a weapon, the guests of the place to harass. For when you reach the third floor of that hotel in Junin, the top step trips you right on your ass. Now, I've had my share of knocks on the head. I felt enemy gunfire in war. But if you want my opinion of what's really bad, I'll be glad to give you the score. Of all the degrading, inhuman, mean things that I in my life have yet seen, the gross, most despicable one of them all is the top step in the hotel in Junin. And there's a beautiful mountain range just north of Nairobi, Kenya, in East Africa. It has beautiful forests, plains, rugged cliffs, and beautiful streams. The wildlife there is amazing. There are elephant, rhino, and all of the antelope, including kudu, eland, especially bongo, a very rare and elusive animal. Well, Gloria and I went to the Aberdares on a photographic safari, and on this trip through the Aberdares, we kept going higher and higher. When evening arrived, we got to our camp, which was at 6,000 feet. We We had our dinner and sat around the campfire for a while, but I had a feeling that everybody realized that in spite of the fire, it was cold and getting colder. So we all said goodnight and retired to our tents. Getting into pajamas seemed a stupid thing to do because the minute I got under the blanket and my coat, I put on a sweater and the same long underwear and some wool socks. And this didn't solve the problem. I was cold. I couldn't remember when I'd been colder. And then I asked myself, Jim, how cold is it? This got me to thinking about cold places, and I started writing things down in the notebook that I had. Strangely enough, things started to rhyme, and this is what came out of it. The North Pole's rather chilly. Those who've been there all will tell. There's lots of snow and lots of ice, and lots of wind as well. An iceberg's really never warm. It takes a while to melt. A snowball's not the hottest thing that I have ever felt. Siberia is never mild and never very nice. They send a lot of people there and put them all on ice. But then there's a place in Africa that puts them all to shame. They say Jack Frost was born here. The Aberdare's its name. They've never known the temperature. The thermometers just fail. For when exposed, the mercury just sinks below the scale. It never, ever snows here. The snow it wouldn't dare. Snow and ice aren't dummies. It's cold in Aberdare. As I lie here grasping in my tent, the chill just numbs my spine. Then suddenly a vision comes that takes me back in time. There's California sunshine, and I can breathe again. A putting green, a fairway, and relaxing in my den. Then just as fast as the vision leaves, no more sunshine, no more golf, no need to wipe my tears away, I simply break them off. A frigid mist is moving in. I've put on all my clothes. There's not enough. The chill seeps in. Is this the end? Who knows? So gather your statistics. Let all the facts be told. Oh, Aberdare, you're beautiful. But Aberdare, you're cold. Gloria and I had taken our daughters, Judy and Kelly, on photographic safaris in Kenya a couple of times, and we had lots and lots of pictures. But I thought maybe it would be a good idea to get some movies as well. Now, Eastman Kodak had just come out with a new 8mm camera with cassette-type film, so you didn't have to thread it like you used to do. So I got one for the twins, and we went off to East Africa. The twins took to the movie camera right away, and in no time were expert in using it. The weather was good, and there was good light, and we were all so happy that we had a movie camera. And then one morning, we all got up raring to go, and we couldn't find the movie camera. We looked through every tent all around the camp, but it couldn't be found. And then suddenly Judy called everybody around and said that she had left the camera in its leather case outside the tent the night before. Well, at that, our guide Bunny Ray, who was a former white hunter, told us to form a ring around the camp and move out from it. After not too long, Judy yelled, and we all went over to her. There was the movie camera, its lens torn off and lying in the grass, and huge teeth marks on the side of the camera, with the film torn out. Bunny said it was a hyena, and that was that. It was kind of quiet around the campfire that night, and I made a decision. I would write about what had happened and try to make it rhyme. I've decided to write it from the movie camera's point of view, and here's how it came out. I'm a movie camera. Instamatic is my name. I'm Eastman's latest model. Super 8's my claim to fame. I was on a shelf in Westwood when an actor purchased me and took me home to 918 in Hills, the Beverly. I remember well the oohs and ahs when out of my box I was taken. I am present to the actor's girls, if I am not mistaken. The actor read my handbook and explained me to the twins. They seemed to understand me and expressed it with wide grins. And soon I comprehended what my mission was to be. I'm to photograph the animals in Kenya, across the sea. They put me in a leather case of rather odd design. I wish it was a new one, but this one will be fine. Then one day I found myself beneath a curious chair. We were on our way to Africa. We were flying through the air. A few days in Nairobi, they put me in a car, and we journeyed to the jungle camp, which seemed to me quite far. And then the action started in the jungle all day long. There was lots of picture taking and the light was good and strong. And then began a wondrous time, the film we did expose. We got the mighty lion and right up to Tommy's nose. But then there came the highlight in a leopard blind one day, and Kelly took a picture as the leopard stalked its prey. That night they praised the camera work and I just burst with pride. But if they liked my work so much, why did they leave me here outside? A midnight wind came through the case and chilled me to the core. And also there were noises that I had never heard before. Then suddenly there was a tug upon the leather case. As wind whipped across the campsite, we were dragged across the place. And through the grass it dragged us a dozen yards or so. And then when we stopped suddenly and we waited, I don't know. It came at once with a snarl. White fangs tore off the case and left me lying in the grass, this monster now to face. It was indeed a monster, and its yellow eyes did glare with viciousness upon me, almost more than I could bear. Its slobbering jaws clamped down on me. If I could only shout, it picked me up and shook me, and then it spit me out. Judy found me after dawn as the moisture filled the air. I felt sorry as she sadly looked as I was lying there. The actor didn't say much. He shook his head and frowned as bit by bit they picked the Instamatic off the ground. There really wasn't much to say, as you could plainly see. It seems that a hyena tried to make a meal of me. And so I'm all in pieces. My career is ended now. I don't know what the future holds. It matters not, somehow. I hope the twins will think of me, and I hope the thoughts are good. I'm just a movie camera, and I did the best I could. When I was a kid, I had a dog named Bounce. As I remember, he followed me home from school one day. Nobody in town claimed him, and my father said that I could keep him. But Bounce wasn't allowed in the house very much, so my father helped me build a little house for him out in the backyard. The dog seemed to like that just fine. The next summer, while I was at scout camp, Bounce was killed. My family didn't tell me about it until I got home, and I cried. I missed Bounce. For some reason, I didn't look around for another dog. Maybe it was because all the other things that were happening, school, Boy Scouts, working in my father's store, it was sort of a busy time. As time went on, with prep school and getting into college, that was a close call, I just didn't give much thought to dogs. Although I did remember the good days with Bounce every once in a while. And then after college and my time in the New York stage and my first years in Hollywood, I didn't seem to have time for a dog. And then came the war, and I don't remember even seeing a dog for those 4 years. After the war and working to get back into the movies, I still had my hands full. Then I married Gloria, and a whole lot of changes took place. When I married her, Gloria had a fine German shepherd that she was devoted to. His name was Bello. His complete devotion to Gloria was a wonderful thing to see. Bello more or less just put up with me for a while. Slowly, though, we got to know each other and things were fine. And Gloria taught me something I had never known. That is, that you don't just have to have a dog around as a pet or a watchdog. You and the dog can become friends. Bello became part of the family. He lived to a ripe old age, and all were sad when he died. Gloria had another shepherd picked out, so after Bello came Pax, a fine young German shepherd. We all liked him, and he fit into the family very well. But Pax started having health problems soon after he arrived, and in a matter of 4 months, we had lost him. In her search for another dog, Gloria decided on a change of breed. Although I think she will always love the German shepherd most, she brought a golden retriever into the family. His name was Simba, and he made a hit with all of us. Simba was a good, very quiet, well-behaved dog, but we all felt it would be good for him to have a companion, so along came a 10-month golden retriever named Bo. Bo was a fine-looking young pup, but soon we found out we had a problem. Bo was on the wild side. He tried to bite holes in furniture. He dug huge holes in our lawn. When our neighbor knocked a tennis ball into our yard, he'd go after the ball and bury it. And then 2 days later, he'd dig it up and eat it. He bit people, including me. We all tried to calm him down, but he had his own ideas. And through all this, I found myself getting closer to Bo for some reason. Maybe it was because after he had torn a hole in the sofa, he would come to me to apologize. And through it all, Bo and I became friends. After about a year, Bo quieted down a lot, and we became better friends than ever. And then it happened. I was making a picture on location in Arizona, and one night our veterinarian, Dr. Keegi, called me and told me that Bo was very sick and was afraid he couldn't save him. I got the next 2 days off and flew home. Gloria and the kids were very quiet, and even Simba, who is now called the Old One, seemed to be worried. I went down to Dr. Keegi's office, and when I saw Bo, I don't think he recognized me. He seemed to have trouble breathing. Dr. Keegi said he was in pain. After some time with him, I decided to take the doctor's advice and have Bo put to sleep. I could hardly see to drive home because of the tears in my eyes, but I decided right then and there that I would write about my friend Bo and try to make it rhyme. And it came out like this. He never came to me when I would call, unless I had a tennis ball or he felt like it, but mostly he didn't come at all. When he was young, he never learned to heal or sit or stay. He did things his way. Discipline was not his bag, but when you were with him, things sure didn't drag. He'd dig up a rosebush just to spite me. When I'd grab him, he'd turn and bite me. He bit a lot of folks from day to day. The delivery boy was his favorite prey. The gas man wouldn't read our meter. He said we owned a real man-eater. He set the house on fire, but the story's long to tell. Suffice it to say that he survived, and the house survived as well. On the evening walks, and Gloria took him, he was always first out the door. The Old One and I brought up the rear, because our bones were sore. He would charge up the street with Mom hanging on. What a beautiful pair they were. And it was a still light, and the tourists were out. They created a bit of a stir. But every once in a while, he would stop in his tracks, and with a frown on his face, look around. It was just to make sure that the Old One was there and would follow him where he was bound. We are early to bedders at our house. I guess I'm the first to retire. And as I'd leave the room, he'd look at me and get up from his place by the fire. He knew where the tennis balls were upstairs, and I'd give him one for a while. He would push it under the bed with his nose, and I'd fish it out with a smile. And before very long, he had tired of the ball and be asleep in his corner in no time at all. And there were nights when I'd feel him climb upon our bed and lie between us, and I'd pat his head. And there were nights when I'd feel this stare, and I'd wake up and he'd be sitting there, and I'd reach out my hand and stroke his hair. Sometimes I'd feel him sigh. I think I know the reason why. He would wake up at night and he would have this fear of the dark, of life, a lot of things, and he'd be glad to have me near. And now he's dead, and there are nights when I think I feel him climb upon our bed and lie between us as I pat his head. And there are nights when I think I feel that stare, and I reach out my hand to stroke his hair, but he's not there. Oh, how I wish that wasn't so. I'll always love a dog named Bo. James Maitland Jimmy Stewart was born on May 20th, 1908, and passed away on July 2nd of 1997. He was an American actor known for his distinctive drawl and everyman scream persona. Stewart's film career spanned 80 films from 1935 to 1991. With the strong morality he portrayed both on and off the screen, he epitomized the American ideal in the mid-20th century. In 1999, the American Film Institute ranked him third on its list of all the greatest American male actors. He received numerous honors, including the Screen Actors Guild Life Achievement Award in 1968, the AFI Life Achievement Award in 1980, the Kennedy Center Honor in 1983, as well as the Academy Honor Award and the Presidential Medal of Freedom, both in 1985. He was born in Indiana, Pennsylvania, and passed away in Beverly Hills, California at the age of 89. He's buried at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale, California. He attended Princeton University. In his occupations, he was an actor and a military pilot and a brigadier general. He was a Republican, married to Gloria Hatrick McLean. They were married in 1949, and Gloria passed away in 1994. They had four children that they loved very much. He served in the Army from 1941 through 1947, and in the Air Force from 1947 through 1968. And again, he was a brigadier general with the 2nd Bombardment Wing, the Air Force Reserve. Jimmy Stewart, 30 pages of poetry. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to round out the half hour with poems that were written by students in Cochise County here in Arizona. These are some of the best poems from the kids from grade school up and through high school. And the book is called A Saddlebag of Poems, Cochise Cowboy Poetry and Musical Gathering. And this is published in 2016. And the name of this poem is Rattlesnake Jim, and it was written by Emerald Deason, who is in 12th grade at Buena High School. Rattlesnake Jim. Through the thick choking dust in the blazing sun came riding a killer, a robber, oh, he was the one. The one plastered to those wanted signs throughout every town in the West. There was his face with a frown. He was known all around as Rattlesnake Jim. He was cunning and quick, able to think on a whim. He would swoop in while mounted on his handsome black steed, named Coyote Jack, a worthy horse for the deed. They would leave countless victims in their wake, and for the survivors there was nothing to take. Not money nor food, not one little speck. Nothing at all, just a big old wreck. He was Rattlesnake Jim, the meanest outlaw around, whose snake-like sneer could send any man cowering to the ground. He was cunning and quick, oh, sly as a fox. He could send a man running right out of his socks. Now, Rattlesnake Jim could not be allowed to roam free. He had to be stopped, and who better than he? Well, Sheriff Billy Dan was his name, or at least that's what they thought, because he had never, ever been seen, not by one single lot. He would do his duty and then be on his way, never stand for applause or hootin' or hollerin' hooray, riding onward into the sunset of the wild, wild west, knowing he had helped some needy folks and had given them his best. Now, Rattlesnake Jim heard the rumors that were spreading mighty quick, but he was not afraid. Oh, no, not a little bit. In fact, he was excited, his hat filled with cheer. He was sure he could leave that sheriff quaking with fear. For he was Rattlesnake Jim, the meanest outlaw around, whose snake-like sneer could send any man cowering to the ground. He was cunning and quick, oh, sly as a fox. He could send any man running right out of his socks. So he searched high and low for that man of the law, ready to send him crying home, right for his ma. But Billy Dan knew, so he sat and he waited, and Jim had no idea that he was being baited. He rode straight into the last town and sat on his trail, no thought in his mind about heading to jail. He jumped off Jack with a gun in hand, his spurs rattling as he stalked through the sand. And then his voice rang out like a crow's raspy caw. Come on out, Billy Dan, and get ready to draw. A new voice was heard then coming from Jim's rear, a voice that didn't sound like a man from what he could hear. Your days are up, Jim, I'll make sure of that. And when Jim turned around, down fell his hat. For there stood a fine belle with no beauty to lack. And Jim kept thinking, dang, what a rack. Let's just say no shots were fired, and there was quite the jamboree. For Sheriff Billy Dan succeeded and wrangled even he. And that is the tale of Rattlesnake Jim, the meanest outlaw around, whose snake-like sneer could send any man cowering to the ground. That is, except one woman named Sheriff Billy Dan, who turned that doggone criminal into a family man. Again, Emerald Deason, 12th grade, Buena High School. Christopher Smith is in sixth grade at Ash Creek Elementary School, and he wrote a poem called Am I There Yet? I'm on my horse going from Douglas to Tucson, of course. Am I there yet? It's as hot as an old black cooking pot. I see a cool water trough, but oh, I don't want to get off. Am I there yet? Way over there I see a town, and by golly, I even hear a hound. Am I there yet? I reach the town, half the trip down, I think I lost a few pounds. Am I there yet? It is finally night and I can rest, I look at the sky and know I'm blessed. Not quite there yet. Up with the sun, last long run, just about there, almost don't care, Tucson up ahead, hot food in the bed, almost there, almost there. Yippee, I'm finally here, just a little sore in the rear. Ow, 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 I'm sore everywhere. Next time I ride, I'm going nowhere, because I'm already there. Christopher Smith from Ash Creek Elementary School. That will do it for this week's reading of poetry. Thank you for listening. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Mark DeGraff. Take care.